Are you with Truth News Radio Australia? On the 24th of April 2013, welcome to another show. My name's Hereward Fenton, and for the next 2 hours I'll be going through some global news, and I will be having an interview in the second hour with a man of extremely eminent qualifications. His name is Malcolm Roberts, and he is going to give us his latest work on debunking the climate change myth and scam that has taken the world by storm and has changed the nature of Australian life with the carbon tax, which was passed through Parliament in 2012. Malcolm Roberts has qualifications in engineering and earth sciences, and he's been a vocal critic of the science of anthropogenic global warming for many years, and he has been in touch with so many people who are part of the scientific establishment, the government establishment, the elite who are setting the agenda for climate change. And he's done an incredible amount of work. He's a very determined, very resourceful man. And in the second hour of today's show, we'll be going through some of the letters that he's written to many Australian members of parliament and senators and heads of business and the CSIRO, that's Australian Research Organisation, and the Bureau of Meteorology. And basically, he is doing what a citizen must do in the face of what appears to be an erosion of our quality of life and our democracy, in the sense that we never voted for the carbon tax. It was just foisted upon us. So Malcolm is really just doing what you have to do in a democracy. He's restoring the democracy. He's taking action. And it's a hard road that he's following. And he's getting a lot of knockbacks. He's getting a lot of rude replies. But he's very determined, very methodical, and very calm as well. So I really greatly admire the man. And he will be on in the second hour to give us a rundown on what he has been up to. In the meantime, I've got some news to run through with you. And we'll dip back into the subject of the Boston bombings, which I was talking about last week. I'm going to run through with you some rather bizarre claims. Not because I actually believe in them myself. I mean, with a show such as this, I think we have the freedom to look at a variety of things, and I'm not too concerned about protecting my good reputation by, you know, basically avoiding certain topics as that they might be considered wacky. Basically, I choose what I want to talk about based on whether I think it's interesting, whether I think it's important. Now, this particular one, I think it's very borderline. And I have certainly avoided talking about a lot of conspiracies, and I stayed away from most of the Sandy Hook conspiracies, other than the general sense that there appeared to be unanswered questions. With the Boston bombings, there are certainly unanswered questions, and there's a lot of evidence, and it's been a lot of eminent alternative news sites have picked up on the fact that the one of the bombers had contacts with the FBI, and now claims are coming forward that he was influenced by Alex Jones, and that, of course, is going to be used to demonize those who look at conspiracy theories generally, and it's kind of a double twist in the sense that they're now saying that the evil mass killing bomber was himself a conspiracy theorist. So therefore, conspiracy theorists are somehow influencing people to do bad actions. And this is all the wacky world of the mainstream media. But I want to talk a little bit about a story that's been coming through to me on email. And there's a story here linked from beforeitsnews.com. And the story is titled "Pictures That Prove a Double Amputee Was an Actor at the Boston Bombings." And the basic claim, I'll just sort of summarise it for you, is that The photographs where we saw a man that appears to have his legs blown off look like they were actually faked. Well, not the photographs were faked, but that the person was some kind of actor, and that perhaps this was all some sort of training scenario where these people were actually acting out the parts of injured victims. And of course, this sort of thing does occur. I mean, real life terrorism training scenarios do occur, and they do try to make it realistic. But of course, what is being claimed here is that this was actually not just being done in the context of a training scenario, that it was actually being done to fool the world. Personally, I find it, I mean, even I have my limits, I really do, it does strain my credibility to think that the evil dastardly forces of the establishment and the New World Order and the powers that be would bother to engage in such a complex little deception. But let me run through the story here that is from this article. It says here that there are sequential pictures of how the double amputee veteran, pulled off an illusion of having his legs blown off at the Boston Marathon bombing. It says here, the article, which appears to be from an anonymous source, is purportedly written by a EMT graduate, emergency medical training graduate. I've been on calls with heavy arterial bleeds, internal bleedings, fatalities, and DOAs, and I'm speaking from direct personal experience with severe trauma. Here is a telling photograph of the amputee actor. I encourage readers to view the photo side by side with my analysis. And we can see there the man in the wheelchair. It looks like one leg has been blown off with the femur protruding, and it's a pretty gory photograph, folks. Another one showing the lower shin basically exposed and the foot completely gone in this photograph. Now, he says here that if you lose both your legs from explosive trauma, half your blood is gone in 1 minute via the femoral arteries and you're dead after two. Bleeding out is worse with blunt force trauma because flesh is torn rather than cut, exposing more arterial and vascular tissue. Now, indeed, there, and in the photographs, it goes on to show that some of the photographs that were taken, and we can see there isn't a whole lot of blood. Some of the criticisms that have been levelled at this, and there's been quite a few of them, as you can imagine, have said that the heat from the explosion would have cauterized the wounds. And one interesting counter to that is that in the photographs that you can see from the actual site where the bombs went off, it doesn't look like too many people have been burned. I mean, there are people with injuries, but it doesn't look like people with burn wounds that I can see in the photographs. So if the claim that there would have not been bleeding due to the heat from the explosion were true, we should have seen a lot of the people around as well suffering burns. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence of that. The human body holds 5 to 6 liters of blood, so we should see blood everywhere. And you would see arterial blood spurting from the injury. Now, just moving on with the current article here. There is a frame in which we see a man setting up, as he claims it, setting up a fake leg wound prosthetic. And then in another frame, we see what he claims as the man making a hand signal. And then we see, apparently, the woman in the same photograph making another hand signal. And the prone amputee raises his left prosthetic injury into the air over the woman's shoulder. No blood is present. The bone is dry, and there is no blood on his leg above the knee. And there's more claims here about hand signals. And then we see the man little bit later, lying on the ground with apparently no one attending to him. And this is rather odd. The man who has actually had his legs blown off is lying there with no one attending to him, although there are people attending to other victims. It is rather strange. This sequence of photographs, I won't go on too much about it. There are a number of odd things about it. The lack of blood, the wheelchair photograph seems a little odd. The fact that the man who had his legs blown off isn't being attended to, it may be nothing. I'll leave it to you to follow up these links, and possibly you might do some research and decide for yourself that this is complete nonsense. On the other hand, I do think that it's clear that the Boston bombings were used for an agenda, and it appears to be an agenda that involves a martial law test rollout. And the number of stories I've had of police doing house-to-house searches and heavily armoured vehicles and lockdowns of entire suburbs certainly indicates that this is kind of a template. And, you know, it really was a very small death toll, only three people, and not, you know, horrific in the sense that it's terrible that someone would do this and horrific that those people died, but not really a major event. You know, far more people are killed in car accidents in one day in a major city than this. So, you know, is it just overreaction, or is it evidence of some sort of pre-planned operation? Or is it simply as the media has told you? I don't know, and I won't attempt to be the judge of that. But you will probably see more of these conspiracies around on the web. And, of course, we have the article here, which I mentioned earlier, that the alleged bomber was an Alex Jones conspiracy fan. And this article has actually been published on an Australian news site, news.com.au. And it's interesting in that references to conspiracy theories and alternative websites and alternative news sources do not often appear on mainstream news sources like news.com.au. It says here, professional conspiracy debunkers are having a field day as ridiculous conspiracy theories about the Boston terrorist chaos burble up from the depths of the internet. And they go through here a number of stories. Many of these theories are rooted in ideas posted on social media hubs and the zany brainwaves of some of America's most prolific conspiracy theorists, like Alex Jones. But there is a twist. There are reports today that the terrorist bombers themselves may have been inspired by web conspiracy theories such as Mr. Jones. One of the two brothers had apparently fallen under the influence of a new friend. And we're just out of time here. We're at the end of the first segment of today's show. I do encourage you to follow up those links on our site. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll be right back with some more news and analysis. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Lift, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Find us on the internet at truthnews.com.au, and you will have an interesting experience there going through our articles and podcasts that go back a few years. A lot of original stories there, a lot of original interviews with an Australian perspective. Now, I was just talking there before the break about the apparent influence of Alex Jones and conspiracy theories on the alleged Boston bombers. And I'll just quote here from the Associated Press. It says here, the Associated Press reports Sanarev, who was the alleged bomber killed in a firefight with Boston police, began to turn to literature and websites claiming the CIA was behind the September 11 terrorist attacks and that Jews controlled the world. Sources told AP he took an interest in InfoWars as well as Al-Qaeda's English language magazine Inspire. Wow, you know, I mean, I didn't know Al-Qaeda had a magazine. You know, I mean, isn't that incredible? It's like Al-Qaeda is this kind of this very modern, very chic organization, international terrorism with a contemporary edge. They've got their own magazine, and you can just sit there and browse their latest catalogs, I guess, and read their latest news. Like, it's just ridiculous. Okay, the whole thing is ridiculous. The whole field of terrorism, that whole zone in our news reporting, is, in my opinion, all fake. It has no reality at all. I mean, every now and then a real act of desperation is engaged in by someone who is in some sort of struggle that might be blowing something up or a suicide bombing. It happens in the Middle East. It certainly does. It's certainly happening in Iraq as we speak. But the phenomenon that we call terrorism in the West is just these little boutique incidents that are then turned into narratives. They're just little incidents that are turned into giant narratives. Even 9/11, as horrific as it was a very contained event. There were no follow-ups. You know, it didn't lead to something further and further and further. There was no invasion. There was no rash of terrorist attacks. It was one event that occurred on one day. And, of course, several thousand people died, mainly because a building collapsed, which should not have collapsed, right? It should have been able to withstand the airline impacts according to its own design guidelines, according to the experts who built it, according to the building security expert who was interviewed about that very scenario. So even 9/11, which is sort of held up as the great, you know, sort of archetypal terrorist event now. Oh, wasn't it terrible? They killed several thousand people. Well, no, the building collapse killed several thousand people. The actual so-called terrorist attack killed a few hundred. But it was the narrative. It was the story, the idea, the 19 hijackers, and somehow what that signifies and symbolizes, the fact that they took down these two huge buildings. And that then became the narrative for wars of conquest, war after war after war after war. Terrorism, in my analysis, has no real substance, other than the fact that the real terrorists are the people sitting in the Pentagon and the puppet masters who control the people who are sitting in the White House. I wouldn't say Obama. I would say the puppet masters who control Obama, the puppet masters who are setting the agenda. Those are the real terrorists, and that is the real terrorism. Everything else is put there to manipulate you into a set of beliefs, which is then used because they need your support to carry out their agenda. They actually do need your support. If we didn't all go along with it, they would actually either have to move to a much more harsh form of direct totalitarian ism and threat and imprisonments and concentration camps, etc., as we've seen in the past, or they would have to give up. And the reason why Truth News Radio Australia exists is simply because that is the antidote. Confronting the lies, and indeed some conspiracy theories are wrong. I don't know I'm 100% right about anything, but confronting the lies as best we can. We know we've had the wool pulled over our eyes. We know we've been tricked. We know it's being manipulated. We know there's an agenda. So we have to confront the lie. We have to confront the false agenda that is simply using fear to try and manipulate a situation to the advantage of people who seem to think that they run the world. So I'd like to move on now with a few other stories. I've got an article here from Syria. And this, again, is a rather gory story, and I do apologize for grossing you out on today's show, because I was talking about a man with his limbs blown off in the previous segment. We now have a story here from Syria that the Free Syrian Army, one of the rebel groups supported by Obama and funded and armed by the CIA, decapitated and grilled one of their victims, who was part of a helicopter contingent, and I'll just try and get the actual story up here, who was actually part of the Syrian government. He was in a helicopter that was shot down, and his head was cut off, and they grilled it and then marched it around the town to show everyone how clever they were. And I'll just read to you the article here. FSA decapitate, then grill their victims. As Syrians work hard to tell their message to the world, NATO-aligned media and international organizations work hard to demonize the Syrian state and ignore the horrific crimes committed by the barbaric, savage Wahhabi sex jihadists airlifted from all sides of the planet by NATO member states and their stooges. On Thursday, the 11th of April 2013, a Syrian army helicopter transporting food supplies to villages and army units besieged around Marat Noman city in Idlib province, when it was attacked by NATO's best assets, Al-Qaeda FSA terrorists, not without chance, of course, calling for a better election law, but with latest weapons provided covertly and openly by their sponsors, and the plane was downed. I'm sorry, that was a very long sentence, but I hope you got the gist of it. On board the helicopter were 8 officers and soldiers. The terrorists rushed to the side of the downed helicopter and decapitated the pilots, then grilled them. And there's an image here from this website of a man apparently grilling another man's head on a barbecue. Well, it actually says here, a video clip released by the terrorists shows the head of the pilot in the above picture still intact on the ground and burnt bodies of others, but also shows quantities of bread on the ground to prove the helicopter was distributing food. Well, that again may not be genuine. I can't say for sure that every news story that I get on any side of any topic is real. But what I do know is that in Syria, the insurgents there have been incredibly brutal. And their links to Islamism, to Islamic fundamentalism and Sharia law are undeniable. The many, many deaths that they have caused is undeniable. And, of course, the Syrian government has asked for a UN investigation into the use of chemical weapons against its own people. And this has been completely downplayed in the Western media, the fact that the Syrian government has actually demanded the investigation. Whereas, in fact, the Western media actually insinuated that the Syrian government was responsible for the chemical attack. But then once the Syrians actually demanded the investigation, they simply stopped talking about it, because they probably know that it's not going to work well with the propaganda slant that they want to put on it, the fact that there is actually an official UN investigation. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be right back. Do stay with us.
Man to man is so unjust. children. Yeah, I don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend. And your best friend, your worst enemy.
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio. Welcome back. The show goes out on the Logos Radio Network every week, broadcasting to people in Austin, Texas, and Oklahoma City, and around the US. But we also have an audience in Australia who mainly get the show by podcast. And you're all most welcome to listen and to grab our podcasts from the website at truthnews.com.au. And if you've got any interesting news snippets that you'd like to send me, I'm very, very interested. You can go to the website and go to the contact page and send me an email that way. And I will certainly look at anything you send me. And if you've got any tips for interviews, or if you yourself would like to come on the show and be interviewed on any topic, please do let me know, because I'm always keen to get new people on the show to talk about things that are important in virtually any subject area. And another thing that I'd like to put the call out today for is a producer, because we've actually had to curtail our live broadcasts here at Truth News because our volunteer producer, Chris, was unable to continue doing that job. And it's a very important job. The producer of the show actually has to take calls on the live feed, and will filter the calls and will give me information about who's called in, and allows me to basically feed the call in or to terminate it. And it's an important job. It's a little bit technical. It takes some knowledge of a few pieces of software, and you actually have to be able to run those on your own setup. But the nice thing about it is that if you're working as a producer for the show, you can work from virtually any remote location as long as you have a good internet connection. You simply have to install the software on your computer, and you can be the producer of the show. Now, until I do get a producer of the show, I'm going to continue doing the shows as pre-recorded, which is fine, and I actually enjoy doing pre-recorded shows, but I also love doing live shows. So if you're listening to this and you'd like to help out and you've got a little bit of, you know, computer technical understanding, you will need that. I do encourage you to get in touch, and maybe we can organize a discussion. We can talk about it further and we can see if it's going to work out. Another aspect of the producer's role that I would really love someone to be able to help me with, and this would probably be tied in with that role of answering the phone and fielding the calls, is actually organizing guests and locking in times and contacting the guests and making sure that they know when to call in and how to call in, and to be very clear about whether they're calling in via Skype or via the phone lines. It's often quite confusing for guests who haven't done a lot of interviews. If they are using Skype, quite often they don't know what type of headphones. Sometimes they aren't using headphones, and that makes the interview not very good, because when the guest isn't using headphones, there's a lot of echo, and we often have to tell them a few things in the lead up to the interview about that. And there's also the process of finding people to come on the show, a variety of things there, which I would love to have some assistance with. So if you're interested in any of that, please get in touch with me. Please go to the website and send me a message via the contact form, and we'll take it further if you're interested. And I'm very open. The only thing is that you will need to have some technical knowledge, so that's a little bit of a barrier there. If you're completely sort of computer illiterate, if you really just don't understand much about computer software and you haven't done anything that's a little bit technical before, I'd say it's probably not for you. But I'm really happy to talk it through with anyone who's interested. Okay, I'd like to turn now to some Australian news. And there's a new documentary which has come out on ABC television about the coal seam gas industry. And I'm going to play to you some of that, and I may pause it for a bit of commentary of my own. You'll be able to find this on our show notes. It's freely available. I think it's accessible from anywhere in the world on the ABC website. But it seems like an important development in the whole saga over coal seam gas in Australia that the national broadcaster has finally taken it seriously as something to investigate. Although I do have expressed my doubts about ABC many times before. It is still possible that they could do a good job on this one, and let's hope that they have. I have not actually had a chance to listen to the whole thing myself, so I'm going to be playing it for you for the first time as we speak. So just kicking off here now from the ABC Four Corners special investigation into coal seam gas in Australia.
Rivers alive with methane.
Never seen it before.
Water you can set fire to. The industry says it's all perfectly safe.
The last thing I want to be associated with is an industry that's going to be toxic or poison. It's just not that.
But others disagree.
I think the truth is that it's not an ecologically sustainable activity.
Behind the scenes in the great coal seam gas debate. Welcome to Four Corners. The CSG industry is worth many billions and growing massively, particularly down the eastern half of Australia. For cash-strapped, revenue-hungry governments, it's a welcome bonanza. But the politics are tricky. There's the promise of jobs in declining rural centres and big export dollars. But many farmers and environmentalists, not always natural allies, are not only concerned but deeply angry. The biggest concern is focused on the impact of mining on water tables and water quality, and how that in turn will affect prime agricultural land and town water. Under pressure, the New South Wales government has banned CSG activity within 2 kilometres of cities and country towns, and the federal government now plans to assess future CSG projects for their impact on water. The industry is adamant that CSG mining is safe and that new government controls will stifle growth, investment and jobs. But just how serious has government oversight of the coal seam gas industry been so far? Tonight's program features a whistleblower from inside the Queensland government process that evaluated 2 major CSG projects. She describes what sounds like a deeply flawed assessment system. The reporter is Matthew Carney.
At the head of the Murray-Darling Basin, the Condamine River is bubbling gas. It's mostly methane, and it's seeping up all over this area from the coal seams deep underground. The Condamine River runs through one of Australia's most developed coal seam gas fields in the Tara area of southern Queensland. Some see this as an alarming sign that permanent damage has been done to the structures below. The coal seam gas industry, backed by the Queensland government, says it's natural and has nothing to do with the wells that have been drilled and fracked in the area. But it started to happen in at least 3 different locations along the river. Old-timers like George Bender have never seen anything like it.
Never seen it before.
And other farmers in the area have seen it?
All the other farmers, they've never seen it like that before.
So is it natural then?
Well, if it was natural, wouldn't it be there all the time?
Property is in the heart of Australia's coal seam gas industry, which is growing at a phenomenal rate. The $50 billion industry is sinking up to 40,000 wells with a network of pipes, gathering lines and roads that crisscross the landscape. Massive holding ponds, these ones 5 kilometres long, contain water sucked from the underground. With the growth has come more evidence that Australia's greatest underground water source, the Great Artesian Basin, is being depleted and contaminated. On his 2,000 acres, George Bender grows cotton, sorghum and runs beef cattle. In 3 years, George will lose his bore water. And without water, his farm could be no more.
26, 27, 28, 29.
The Queensland Water Commission says the coal seam gas industry is the cause.
Well, there won't be any water. We won't have any stock water. When the drought comes and the surface water dries up, there won't be any water. Well, we're not the only landholders in this position. There's quite a few.
Yeah. And we've got 2 stock water bores in the immediate affected area.
Just pausing it there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, playing you there a documentary on coal seam gas in Australia, an investigative piece by the Australian National Broadcaster, the ABC. You're with Truth News Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I've been playing you here some of a recent investigative piece by ABC on coal seam gas. That's gas mining in Australia, sometimes known as fracking. Huge industry, and we saw in the video there, listeners won't have been able to see that, but the effect it has had on the land is just incredible. I mean, vast swathes of land now crisscrossed by roads and pipes, and it's just a complete transformation, and it just turns what was agricultural land into what looks like a giant industrial estate. I mean, no wonder the farmers are so up in arms about it, just for the way it's affected the quality of life. Apparently, the influx of people and the way it changes the economies in local areas also is very disturbing and very disruptive. It takes the peacefulness away from living in the country, which is one of the main things that that people who live in the country love and farmers love, is that they've got their own peace of mind in their own life. It's a very hard life being a farmer, and they don't make a lot of money. But one of the things that they do have is their peace of mind and their quiet. Well, they don't have that anymore in many parts of Australia. And I was just thinking, I have a fear that when we see a change of government in Australia, at the moment we have a Labor government, which, although it's very, very bad on many, many topics, the one area that it appears to be doing some good on is in yoking back the coal seam gas industry and restraining the amount of drilling, although they haven't really done that great a job on it, but they've done something. They've actually showed some concern, and they've now brought in, as you heard there in the last segment, restrictions on the vicinity in which coal seam gas wells can be sunk. But the Conservative Party in Australia, the Liberal Party, I think will be much more laissez-faire with this industry. And, it really scares me because, and it's like we're caught in a vice. We're caught between two extremes, two wings of the same bird of prey, as I've heard it said, the left and the right. And they both have ways that they can wreck your life. And, of course, the Labor government has done it with the carbon tax and with the Agenda 21 and so much of this nonsense about climate change. Well, the Liberal Party has vowed to repeal the carbon tax, and they're much softer on climate change. But I fear that they will be much more laissez-faire with the coal seam gas industry, which, everything I've seen, is a horrendous threat to our lives and our personal lives and our environment. So it's just hard to know which way to turn in this strange world we have, where we have pseudo-political parties sort of doing a tag-team effort to basically push agendas that are essentially corporate banking oligarchy agendas, and which often seem to be geared to destroying our quality of life. I mean, the effects of coal seam gas cut across a myriad of facets of life. I mentioned there about the quality of life and the economy and the disturbances brought by such a big industry and so many people coming and going. But then, of course, there's the actual effect on the environment, the gas that is leaked out from the ponds. People can smell it. People can breathe it. And, of course, it goes into the ground. It goes into the aquifers. You know, it puzzles me. It puzzles me as to whether this is part of some perhaps underlying intention of the powers that be to kill us off gradually, to basically just destroy our quality of life, to reduce us in some way. It's hard to believe, and it's a very, very conspiratorial thing to say, I know, but this stuff is pretty wicked. So anyway, I'm going to continue now playing you here the clip from ABC Four Corners, and we'll probably continue with that till the end of the first hour. But do stay with us, because in the second hour I'm going to have Malcolm Roberts on to talk about his work exploring and exposing the deceptions of climate change and a number of important letters that he's written to MPs and senators and heads of industry around Australia. And we're going to go through all of his research in the second hour, so stay with us for that. So just returning you now to the ABC Four Corners documentary on coal seam gas.
The Water Commission has identified 85 wells that may run dry.
26063 in the Walloon coal measures.
Bore 26063 and Bore 83627 are on George's property.
The licence number there.
George has three coal seam gas wells that sit on the edge of his property. To get the gas to flow, the water in the coal seams has to be drained out first. In George's case, the water table in the coal seams under his property will drop by up to 105 metres.
They should have told us the truth in the first place, but they would have known that they were going to draw down the water in the Walloon coal measures, and that's what's upsetting to us. They didn't tell us the truth in the first place.
And you think they knew back then?
Ah, well, common sense just tells you that's going to happen, the way I see it, anyhow.
George Bender's family have farmed on this land for five generations. And George and his wife Pam feel farmers are being sacrificed for a new industry which may only last a generation.
Any drawdown whatsoever in the
I've got five children and they love the farm. It's hard.
You don't think they'll be able to continue, do they?
I'm scared. I'll be honest with you, I am scared. What's going to be left? Nothing. They've taken everything.
The coal seam gas companies have pledged to compensate by making good, but many farmers can't see how they can fix the water table. In the longer term, the Queensland Water Commission says another 528 bores will be affected. The drawdown will be much worse further west, predicting up to a 700-metre drop. But the industry says that's just the worst-case scenario, and more than 20,000 bores will remain unaffected while they'll fix the damaged ones.
The obligation is for those gas companies to talk with the impacted areas and make that good. That's either by deepening the bores, finding different water aquifers to deal with, and keeping the farmer whole.
They choose where they want to funnel water.
Farmers turned activist Brian Monk and his son David have eight wells near their Tara property. They're operated by Queensland Gas Company, or QGC, which is owned by British Gas. There's also a pipeline that runs down the side of their farm.
Well, this is how you leave a permanent scar on this country, because this will never recover, ever. They've pulled all the bottom up to the surface.
Brian Monk says the coal seam gas companies have been allowed to take as much water as they want from the aquifers below and clear the native vegetation.
We're not allowed to clear it. The farmer on the other side of our boundary line here, he's not allowed to clear it. But this foreign company can actually come in here and devastate 50 metres wide, 500 odd kilometres long. Whereas genuine Australians that actually own the land are not allowed to.
Brian says the damage has already been done. The water table has been lowered, and he believes that's brought methane and poisonous chemicals like hydrogen sulfide and toluene into his bore.
This is the bore that we use basically for washing dishes, showering and cattle. Now it's absolutely useless. And you can see the gas bubbling through it.
QGC says it's naturally occurring because its wells are not operational. The government has done three reports on this bore and concluded it's safe and not flammable. A finding Brian Monk finds absurd.
We're going to basically light the unlightable gas. The evidence now is everywhere. You can walk around our property, put a pick in the ground and read methane.
The evidence of large-scale methane seepage from gas wells and pipes is starting to gain a scientific basis. At this muddy campsite on the edge of the Tara gas fields, these scientists from the Southern Cross University are challenging the notion that CSG is cleaner and greener than other fossil fuels.
The gas wells are the crosses over there.
This is kind of the first independent data that's been collected in Australian coal seam gas fields. And despite them being operated for, you know, a number of years, this research hasn't been undertaken yet. So it is very preliminary, but at least we're starting to bring some data to the table.
Drive very slowly, make sure we can pick up those hot spots.
They've already released research that has found the level of methane in the air is up to three times higher than areas without coal seam gas.
What the petroleum industry does do is look for methane seeps to help it identify where the coal seam gas is and where there may be shallow coal. This is well before any activity of coal seam gas. So I'm not surprised to see the variations at all, but I think the Southern Cross University paper was fundamentally flawed and the peer review showed that.
But it's basic research that the gas companies and the government have failed to do. So they've come back to do more research and have fitted their car with a unique spectrometer that can take measurements every second.
We're sampling the gas from the front of the vehicle as we drive. It comes into our instrument here and we can monitor the concentrations of methane, carbon dioxide, and also the carbon stable isotope value, which is like a chemical fingerprint of those gases.
Just leave it there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I've been playing you a documentary from ABC Television about coal seam gas. Looks pretty interesting and well made, and I have heard some of these people speak before, particularly Brian Monk. I know it's real, and I know it's devastating the country. We'll be covering that in future shows, but for now, we're going to break, but we'll be back in hour two with Malcolm Roberts. Stay with us.